I am Planta on the Line in Vancouver, British Columbia, at thecommentary.ca. One of the more exciting albums from Broadway has just been released, the Jonathan Larson Project. It is following a successful run of shows at Feinstein's 54 Below, which is described as Broadway's living room. It is the brainchild of one of the street's dynamic promoters and historians, Jennifer Ashley Tepper. She joins me now to talk about finding material previously unheard in the archive of the late Jonathan Larson, in the Library of Congress. His notes, photos, ephemera were donated there following his untimely death in 1996, just as his musical Rent was to have its world debut. The show went on to receive the 1996 Pulitzer Prize for Drama, as well as multiple Tony Awards. It continues to be performed in more than two dozen languages around the world and was made into a major motion picture. Another of Mr. Larson's works, Tick, Tick, Boom, is set to be made into a film, and Ms. Tepper is serving as a historian for that project. This new album, which is available for digital download and streaming, features Jonathan Larson's work arranged by Charlie Rosen and a lot of this generation's great musical theater talent, including Nick Blamier, Lauren Marcus, Andy Mintus, Krista Rodriguez, and George Salazar. The work is groundbreaking, and Larson's words and music is timeless and awfully timely. There are some numbers off the record that strike a chord with today's politics, the struggle of an artist, and divisions in society that existed 30 or so years ago when Mr. Larson wrote this material, and that is prevalent today. A limited edition CD package will be available the 14th of June. That includes a remarkable 40-page book that has images of original lyrics, notebook pages, and photos. Jennifer Ashley Tepper is a theater historian, the creative and programming director at Feinstein's 54 Below, as well as a producer of the current Broadway musical Be More Chill, which was nominated for a Tony Award yesterday for Best Score. That was written by Joe Iconis, who is also writing the musical Broadway Bounty Hunter, which Ms. Tepper is also producing, that will open off Broadway in the summer. This new album is from Ghostlight Records. Visit ghostlightrecords.com. At Jen Ash Tep is the Twitter handle. Please welcome to the Planta on the Line program, Jennifer Ashley Tepper. Ms. Tepper, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us. What is it like for you now that the album is out? And for a lot of people, it's a side to Jonathan Larson and his work that they didn't know, and to think that it could have gone unheard for a long time.
It's been magical. It's just been wonderful to hear from people that are really loving the songs and the work overall, and to get to share these songs that really show so much of his versatility and, you know, show people who love Rent and Tick, Tick, Boom and his work kind of other things and that he was capable of and working on. It's been incredibly gratifying and exciting.
Yeah, so where you obviously found these songs in his archive at the Library of Congress, but this is, I guess, early material before Tick, Tick, Boom. Where did these songs come from? And people, when they read the book that comes with the album, they'll see obviously the context in which he wrote this material. Generally, where are the songs from?
Yeah, you know, Jonathan wrote from the time that he was in college right until he sadly passed away at the age of 35. So it's all of these songs from unproduced musicals, songs that he wrote that he hoped would be on the radio, standalone theater and cabaret songs, like songs he wrote for reviews. So there's a huge range of material. And, you know, there's a cut song from Rent. There's a cut song from Tick, Tick, Boom. My goal in kind of assembling what the Jonathan Larson Project was to show a variety of the different kinds of material he was writing. So there's political material. There's personal material and everything, you know, in between. It's a really kind of astonishing array of songs.
And to think that some of the material, some of the songs are, some of them are 25, 30, more than 25 years old, 30 years old. You know, and I'm thinking of, say, White Male World or La-Di-Da Rap, The Truth Is a Lie. These are songs that hit so close to our era that I'm sure you and the cast that we hear on the album, you must have had some interesting discussions about, say, the context and the era in which you're performing this material. today.
Absolutely. And, you know, it all feels so relatable, for better or for worse. Mm. You know, there's a song called Iron Mike that's about the Exxon Valdez oil spill. And to hear something that was so, you know, about saving the environment and about Jonathan's feelings on what we needed to do to help our planet not have these kinds of disasters, I mean, it's incredibly relevant, even though that's specifically about an incident from another time. And then you have things like White Male World, where if someone brought that into 54 Below today, I'd think, wow, a brand new song. This is so relevant. And then there's also, you know, we had songs that he wrote about being a struggling musical theater writer and artist and, you know, what it was like to live in New York during that time in the 80s and 90s. So a lot of those things are incredibly relatable, too, in a personal way. The songs just hit home for us in so many ways, both the people putting the concert together and audiences that I've spoken to. And to get that continuing with this album is really exciting.
And that speaks to Larson's talent, doesn't it, in terms of how prescient he was, and at the end of the day, just how talented he was, doesn't it?
Absolutely. You know, there are these songs that have, like, rapid-fire, intense musical theater-style lyrics and melodies, and then there are these songs that really call to mind, you know, pop songs and specific influences from the rock world, and he really was cultivating his voice, which was completely unique, but which also, you know, collided both popular music and musical theater in a way that he eventually changed musical theater with Rent, and now has been continued on to future generations of writers and Broadway folks in general. So that's all the seeds of that are definitely all throughout this album and these songs.
Yeah, his impact on the theater today, I mean, you just spoke about that, but I mean, you look at contemporary theater today, I mean, it really does stem from his work and sort of the influence he's had on people like yourself, people of your generation, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, I am the Rent generation. Like, I grew up obsessed with the album, and my bat mitzvah sign-in board is me dressed as Mimi popping out of a pile of Rent playbills. So, you know, our cast on this project, which was Nick Blamire, Andy Mantis, George Salazar, Lauren Marcus, and Krista Rodriguez, all had these really unique connections to Jonathan and his material and how it had changed their lives. So they were able to bring all that personal connection to these songs in a way that I really think you can feel in every word of the album.
The process of seeing this material for the first time at the Library of Congress, I can only imagine just how amazing that was, and you even write about it in the notes to the album. It was an emotional experience, wasn't it? Seeing his writing and seeing these tapes and all the other material that was there.
Absolutely. You know, it took me years to put this together the way that I did, because after my first trip to the Library of Congress, I said to myself, like, I'm not putting together this concert song cycle until I listen to everything and look at everything. And there are incredible boxes and boxes of tapes and material, archival materials and notebooks and all kinds of things. You know, I went through his playbills. I went through personal photos. Like, I went through drafts of lyrics for songs we didn't even use, but all of that informed what this eventually became. And I spent a lot of time, you know, talking to his family, talking to his close friends, kind of learning a lot about who he was and what he was trying to do, which also informed this work greatly. So it all, you know, even the parts that aren't literally in the Larson Project, things really affected me quite a bit. And being there at the Library of Congress, it was incredibly emotional because, you know, I was hearing so many of these songs for the first time that nobody had heard in years, or that, you know, the two of the biggest discoveries I made, the opening number and the closing number, were songs that his family and friends didn't remember him ever having performed. You know, they were pretty obscure, and I thought they were just incredible works of art that needed to be shared. So having that all in a computer and then in my brain for so long before it became a real show, yeah, I was dying to present it and get it out there in the world.
So it was 8 nights, was it, at 54 Below?
It was 6 nights and 12 shows, so 2 shows a night, very emotional 2-show nights.
And was the idea to make it an album, was that something that was thought of early on, or...?
From the beginning, I always wanted to preserve it in some way, and I loved, you know, the idea of getting it out there for people that couldn't literally be there in live and in person to see the concert. So, yeah, an album was always part of the dream for it, and, you know, I think hopefully it'll live on beyond this as well, and whether it's licensed or whether, you know, it gets to be a show at some point beyond what it was at 54 Below.
Yeah, and I'm sure performers on the album, performers at 54 Below, I mean, when they branch out later, make their own albums, I'm sure they'll incorporate some of this material in their work, won't they?
Yeah, you know, I would love nothing more than for people to be able to perform this everywhere. So I think hopefully at some point, you know, there'll be sheet music. We really want this to be something that lives on however it can. And I'll also say, you know, there were 17 songs in the concert, but there's also like other incredible unheard Jonathan Larson work. So if this ever was expanded at some future point, you know, we had a special guest who performed a different number each night in the concert because there was just so much material. And the way that these 17 songs fit together as a song cycle made complete sense, but I could see a world where it might be expanded at some point.
You mentioned the cast members that we hear. Someone that I've become quite a fan of watching clips of him perform on YouTube is Charlie Rosen. And
yes.
He arranged, he had such a unique, and people can read that profile of him in the New York Times recently, but would you explain to us what he does in terms of and how you work together in terms of how this music is heard, say?
Absolutely. So Charlie Rosen is truly a musical genius. I don't use those words lightly, but I will use that to describe him. He's an orchestrator. He can literally play 70 instruments. You know, I went to Charlie and had these demos of Jonathan Larson songs, a lot of which were just Jonathan pounding on a keyboard in 1983. And Charlie and I took them and said, okay, how do these get fully musically realized? So Charlie expanded every song from you know, a demo with just a voice and a keyboard into a, you know, whether it's a fully, you know, full band, full cast, different kinds of musical influences. We looked at what Jonathan's intentions were, and then Charlie said, okay, well, in this song, it seems like Jonathan is, like, trying to write a song for Whitney Houston, and this also calls to mind some kinds of sounds of the 80s that people were using around the time he wrote the song, and he takes all of that, and he crafts it into what it became for this album. So I think you get a really good sense of it from listening to the bonus track on the album, which is the Jonathan Larson demo of Green Street, and then listening to the opening number of Green Street, because it's, you know, it's a full group opening number with our full band, and you really get what Charlie did to create that from listening to both of those.
Yeah, you get all the eras, don't you? You get the 80s, you get the sensibilities that Mr. Rosen has in terms of the style of his arrangements, you know, that some go back to, you know, the middle part of the 20th century, and then to the sound that is obviously 2018, 2019, the contemporary sound, all in, not only in Green Street that you mentioned, but in throughout this album, don't you?
Absolutely. And the way that he crafts the lines of certain orchestrations to make certain lyrics get emphasized or to call to mind certain, you know, like Valentine's Day is a cut song from Rent. So how do we make it sound completely like its own thing, but also, you know, call Rent to mind when people are listening to it? He just did an extraordinary job with that. And actually, Danielle Gimbel, who was our copyist on the show, had an incredibly unique job as well of, you know, transcribing these songs into sheet music and creating what the lyrics and music are as we kind of went spelunking through what Jonathan left behind of demos and you know, scratches of paper. So, you know, all three of us were really eager to bring Jonathan's work to life exactly how we thought he would have wanted it, you know, us to, and
yeah,
just trying to understand that from what was at the library.
Now, you wear many hats. You're a producer, 54 Below, you're a programming director there. You're also a theater historian. When you look at his material and you look at say, his own writing and his own penmanship even, is it a lot neater than, say, some of the other people that have written musicals over the years?
Yeah, you know, I think what we have of Jonathan's work is pretty unique in that he was doing a lot of it on the computer, you know, more so than other people whose archives we have who have, you know, left those. So
right.
For him, a lot of it, you know, I was reading floppy disks of his, and I was looking at, you know, because we have this digital footprint of Jonathan's, you can see, like, oh, he worked on Find the Key from Tick, Tick, Boom, and then he played a game of Minesweeper. So some of it is digital, which is cool. And then a lot of it is written, and the written stuff is neater than what I would see today, because he was more used to writing than people are now, which is now completely digital. So certainly there's a lot of, like, you know, he would write out lyrics on notepads from the diner that he worked at,
yeah.
But then a lot of it is super organized because he was so eager and, you know, persevered in making these musicals happen. He was very responsible in staying organized about, like, drafts of scripts and different versions of songs, and it was really interesting to go through all of that.
There's a marvelous piece of paper where he writes goals for himself. And he died at 35, and I was doing the math. He would have been 59 today.
Mm-hmm.
It's remarkable to think that he knew where he wanted to go. And I mean, had he lived, he would have ended up, you know, beyond what he could have imagined. But did he know that he was as talented as he was?
I love that question. You know, to a degree, in a wonderful way, I think he did. He was known for going up to people at parties and when he would get introduced to new people saying, I'm the future of musical theater. And I think he had a really healthy sense of how amazing he was at what he was doing. And he was just so frustrated that people weren't, you know, giving him the platform he deserved to be heard. I think that he would have gone on to write more incredible musicals. And I have no doubt that some of them would have been very political based on a lot of the work of his that I've been able to study and find.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I was listening to the album, and you know, when he name checks people like Roger Ailes, for example, I mean, it's remarkable to think just how much insight he had into what America is, and I say that as a Canadian.
Absolutely. The lyric Make America Great is in that song, and, you know, as part of making fun of what a campaign promise would be. I mean, he was incredibly prescient, and I think that also, like, the song Hosing the Furniture, which he skewers, you know, like, the patriarchy and what it means to be a stay-at-home, like, housewife. There's so much in this material that speaks to, like, our time, both, like, socially and politically, in a way that just nobody else did it quite like he did it.
Yeah. Now, you're a producer for Be More Chill, which is it's doing quite well on Broadway now, isn't it?
Yes, yes. We are at the Lyceum Theater on Broadway, and actually two of our Be More Chill cast members are on the Jonathan Larson Project album, and as well as, of course, Charlie, who's the orchestrator of both.
Right. Well, what do you so I mentioned you're a producer. We have an idea, say, of what a producer does through you know, Max Bialystock, for example, or Ziegfeld. Are you doing stuff like that? Are you looking at the grosses every week? Are you at the box office regularly checking receipts and the sort?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that's a huge part of it as far as, you know, just strategizing how to get those butts in seats and how to make them have the best experience once they're there. You know, at the end of the day, producing is guiding the ship, and it's just making sure that the show is coming off as successfully as possible.
And you're working on, it's called Broadway Bounty Hunter, is that right?
Yes. And so that's the next new musical by Joe Iconis, who wrote Be More Chill. We're off Broadway this coming summer.
Yeah, and so it's obviously a very busy time. but while you're creating theater of your own, and to be able to look back, say, at the legacy of a guy like Jonathan Larson, I mean, I read this terrific interview you gave to The Interval. And you talk about, say, growing up in Florida. What is it like for you now to do all the things that you're doing? I mean, it must be a dream.
It's truly a dream. It's a literal dream come true. And, you know, what you said is interesting to me because I really don't think I would be as qualified to create something like the Jonathan Larson Project if I didn't work so closely with musical theater writers who are writing now, like Joe Iconis. I feel like I could understand Jonathan's intentions and what he wanted this to be just from having the understanding of what being a writer is, as I do from, you know, working on things like Be More Chill and Broadway Bounty Hunter.
Yeah, the in that interview, you say that you visited New York for the first time in 2001. So this is not very many years ago.
No.
And here you are on Broadway producing and producing albums and the sort. Is it what, say, young Jennifer could have imagined growing up?
That's a great question. I think it is. You know, I just always dreamed of being part of making new musicals happen and also part of, you know, keeping the history of musicals alive. So I've been lucky enough to get to do a great collision of both of those things. But, you know, my first visit to New York in 2001, my first Broadway show I ever saw was The Full Monty, and that starred Annie Golden, who's our star of Broadway Bounty Hunter. So I've certainly done a lot of thinking about the full circle of that. And, of course, I also saw Rent on that trip, which was not my first time seeing it because I'd seen the tour, but it was a very formative moment with all of that kind of coming full circle this year.
I mean, I can only imagine that there are people listening to us. I mean, I'm speaking to you from Vancouver, and you know, people pick this up anywhere, really, who have grown up elsewhere and who look to New York as you might have from Florida growing up and want to do or want to make it there, if you will, to use the lyric from that song. And we will look to you and see someone who has. And what does that mean to you that you're able now to, at a very young age, I should say, to do all the things you've done and to show people just how to make it, say, in Manhattan?
You know, so much of it has just been, like, doing what you love and what you want to do at any level and growing that, you know, both with the Jonathan Larson Project and with all of the projects of Joe Iconis's that I'm now producing on and off Broadway. You know, all of this started from miniature versions of these concerts and, like, versions of shows we were doing in basements and barns and, you know, just little versions of this. So I think for people who want to produce or who want to be part of theater, so much of it is just getting started with what you love at any level, even if it's, like, doing a show for 10 people in a basement, and growing that. And I've been lucky enough to be able to do that during my time in New York, and it's grown in such a way that I'm grateful for based on my collaborators.
Back to the Jonathan Larson Project for just a moment. In terms of the process of looking at this stuff, I mean, were you talking to members of his family throughout?
Yeah, you know, the Larson family was incredibly supportive of the project, and Jonathan's sister, Julie, has been an incredible, you know, force in making sure that I could have this happen. They've all truly been, like, I can't even tell you how great about, like, all of the tools that I needed to do this. And as well as that, you know, Jonathan had so many close friends who have been part of carrying on his legacy as well with Julie, and everyone was so, you know, open to having a conversation or saying, oh, I remember this song, and he wrote it at this time, and this is how he was feeling and what he was going through, just like the personal references that they have for the material, which made this all deeper and richer.
And Tick, Tick, Boom, I understand that'll be a film shortly, is that right?
Yes, I am lucky enough to be working on it as the historian consultant, so we're so excited. It's going to be a great movie.
Yeah, and that's another wonderful opportunity for people to get to know Larson and his work.
Absolutely. Tick, Tick, Boom is a tremendous piece, and I think in converting it into a film, it's going to just be an incredible way for more people to understand his work.
Yeah. Is there a timeline for that and when that'll come out, say?
There is not yet, but I think, you know, people will know pretty soon, so stay tuned.
Yeah, especially with people like yourself who are part of the project. Another hat that you wear is your program director at 54 Below, and as I said, I've become a fan of Charlie Rosen's work. Just seeing these videos that people upload from there on YouTube, as someone who works there, is that something that, I don't know if proprietors of establishments encourage uploading videos from a performance, say, but for people like myself who are out of town, it's marvelous entertainment. And
no, we love it. That's one of my favorite things about 54 Below is, and about producing concerts and about all of this, is like you can upload it and let it be shared with people all over the world. So, you know, I'm so passionate about the way that new musical theater writers and people like Charlie, who are creating new work at 54 Below in other ways, get to upload it to YouTube. And then, you know, someone who's in Canada or Ohio or Japan can watch it and become a fan. I mean, that's how Be More Chill happened, is that people watched it on the internet and loved it, and we were able to make it happen in New York because of that. So, I love that you're a fan of Charlie from those YouTube videos. God knows I love watching them.
Yeah, it's also a historic space, isn't it?
Yes, we're underneath Studio 54, so it's the old basement of Studio 54.
Yeah, and people know what went on down there. And
now,
now, to have it, I read it online that it's described as Broadway's living room. To have it reconfigured as it is, as a space, that must be great for people in your community to be able to, say, hang out and perform and the sort, especially on off days. Did you get a lot of tourists that come through there?
Absolutely. You know, we love being Broadway's living room, and the idea that people, if they're not in a Broadway show at the moment, or if they are in a Broadway show and it's their night off and they come perform, it's so exciting to have just like year-round Broadway-centric programming, from musicals and concert to big Broadway stars. It's a great place to be. I've been here for about 6 years, and, you know, it's let me do things like the Jonathan Larson Project, and then also, you know, this week we have Sherry Renee Scott and Norbert Leo Butts, who are two of my favorite Broadway stars, reuniting for a duo concert. So it's never a dull moment. And there's always a lot of good stuff going on for locals and tourists.
Yeah. The other thing about the Jonathan Larson Project that people will obviously enjoy, other than the music, is just the marvelous book that comes along with it. In terms of the items that were chosen to accompany, say, the lyrics, you obviously had a say in that. it's remarkable to look at. And, you know, I mentioned his penmanship a moment ago. It's just remarkable to see all the stuff that, he carried with him through those years, and to be able to see that again along with this material that, for a lot of people, they'll be rediscovering, or discovering, I should say, for the first time.
Absolutely. Yeah, the full album, which will come out in June, which has that booklet that has liner notes and lyrics and archival material and photos, is so filled with stuff that I think true fans of Jonathan Larson and of these songs will just really eat up. I mean, it was incredible to go through and just pick a few, because, you know, there's hundreds of boxes of material, as mentioned, but we really picked some good stuff for that booklet.
Yeah, so that you mentioned that comes out in June. And
yeah.
People should get that. People ought to get that. But until then, they can buy the album, download it as people do nowadays. I heard it on my Spotify.
Yeah, the album's available digitally wherever you get digital music, and then the full booklet with the hard copy is available in June.
Yeah, it's been such a pleasure to speak with you, Jennifer. I'm an admirer of your work, and I'll be in New York in September and can't wait to finally, after all these years of seeing it on YouTube, see 54 Below.
Oh my gosh, amazing. I'm excited to have you here, and thank you so much again for having me on.
The Jonathan Larson Project is available for digital download and streaming on all the platforms that one does those sorts of things nowadays. And of course, the album is available through Ghostlight Records' website, ghostlightrecords.com. Jennifer Ashley Tepper joined me on the line from New York City. In Vancouver, I'm Joseph Planta.